powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
This hour, Bump and Stacy is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Coming up in four down territory, what stats are the most concerning in the loss to the Niners on Sunday? Also, we are going to look at some kind of positive. We're taking a positive away from this. Before we get to any of it, though, let's go to what caught my eye. Bump, get us started.
What caught my eye? Al Woods is a beast, man.
Yeah.
If there was anyone on that defensive line who was active, it was him, man. He was pushing the guards and the centers in the backfield. He got his hand on a couple footballs, made some TFLs, tackles for losses back there. Al Woods, one of the captains of this defense, man, looks really good. And if you want to stop the run, you need a guy like Al Woods. I was impressed by him. He looked solid.
Yeah, you know, he was great for this team last year. Has been an underrated member of this defense in general, as any of the interior guys are, right? Like any big dude on the line, you're going to be underrated always without fail. You just... What you want is for not only Al Woods to be great, but for some of those edge rushers to step it up. And you know what I will say? Uchenna Nwosu, he wasn't as active as he was in week one, and there were some mistakes, obviously, overall. But he has been solid, and the only drawback about that is you wish it was Uchenna Nwosu and someone else has been solid for this team. So far, you haven't heard Daryl Taylor's name called nearly enough. You haven't heard any other guys' names called nearly enough. So credit to at least the big guys for getting it done up front. Hopefully they can get a little more help.
Need some help. Boye Mafe had a decent day. Miles Adams did not play, so he will help when he gets in there. You need guys like Puna Ford to do well. Also, Puna had a tackle for loss. Daryl Taylor still had two tackles for loss, but you don't see him with the frequency that you want to see him making plays.
No, Daryl Taylor is a guy that you wanted to be like Frank Clark when Frank Clark had 13 or 14 sacks for you in 2018.
Yep.
Right? He's a guy. He's not your Michael Bennett rusher. He's your Frank Clark, your Cliff Avril. He's your guy that's supposed to get out there and be active and getting 12, 13 sacks a season. And the very, very best obviously get 15, 16, 17 sacks a season.
Well, we're 2 weeks in.
We're 2 weeks in.
Still room for improvement.
I know.
We'll see if he could step it up.
All right. Next up, what caught my eye? Four running backs on the field. Was anyone wondering what that play would be? Was anyone looking at that play not thinking, what are the Seahawks trying here? I have joked, Curtis, I know you can testify to this. I have joked numerous times that this offense should go wildcat at all times.
All time.
Keyword. Joked. Now, I never mind a wildcat play. I never mind a flea flicker. I love a trick play once in a while, but it's got to be executed. And this one from the jump, not only the defense recognizing you have four running backs out there, what are you going to do? Of course you're going to do this, right? You have one of like a handful of things. It didn't look smooth. Like it wasn't executed smoothly. And then DJ Dallas with the less than stellar throw that turns into an interception. No quarterback controversy there between Dallas and Geno Smith. But I mean, at this point, you've made Geno your starter. He's helped lead the offense down the field. Why try to get fancy there?
You know what? Now, they ran one or two plays prior to that, and I think that was the biggest run by Ken Walker out of that formation.
Yeah.
He got the ball rushed for about 8 or 9 yards. Now we get into the five, and you want to throw the ball. Just give it to a guy who throws the football. But here's the thing about that formation and that play. I guarantee you at practice, it looked beautiful.
It looked perfect,
right? But my coaching point to DJ Dallas would be, and maybe the coaches had it, said it to him as well. If he ain't wide open, if he is not standing there with his arms up waving, I'm talking about DK Metcalf, that's who he's trying to throw it to, then you don't throw the ball and just run the rock. DJ looked like he ain't thrown a football in a long time, man. He threw it right to the defense. I get their creativity, but sometimes when you're down in that position, just go for what you know. And Pete Carroll also said during the postgame, he goes, I wish I would have switched that up. Because he said the look wasn't there.
Yeah.
And he wished he would have said something, but he let his offensive coordinator do his thing.
Now, I did like the idea of adding more creativity in general. And that's been a big complaint about this offense for years and years and years. No matter the offensive coordinator, it was with Bevel. It was with Schottenheimer. We'll see what happens with Waldron. So that's been something people have complained about. I am not going to complain about it and then lament the use of creativity. I will not do that. However, the execution less than stellar. I hope that it doesn't. I hope two things happen. One, it doesn't deter them from using creative plays in the future. And two, that this team recognizes that maybe some places are better than others for those creative plays, and getting into the red zone for the first time and really needing a score maybe wasn't the best place.
Here's the thing about that formation, too. When you're down there and you want to use that formation, I could see, was it the main guy? DJ Dallas was the main guy, right? Using the play fakes and boom, handing the ball off, right?
It had so much. Right, it had potential to be really cool.
Yeah, the potential is there. Running the rock, you know what I'm saying? But I think they have to set that up a bit more. You got to put that on film 2 or 3 weeks in a row, and then that pass is going to be set up.
Next up. Bump, what else caught your eye?
What caught my eye is that DK Metcalf had 4 receptions for 35 yards, was targeted 6 times. He needs to be a staple in this offense. You don't pay him the money that you paid him and don't find ways to get him the football. Yes, Tyler Lockett did his thing, 9 for 107, intermediate stuff all day. But DK is your big play receiver out there. And I'm waiting to see how long it takes for DK to get truly frustrated, because he wants the ball. He's a competitor. He wants to make the play. And if you're not getting fed, if you're not implemented into the offense the way you'd like to, he's going to get frustrated. You know, going into a game, when certain players are called, if this is your play or not.
Yeah.
If you are a key piece into this week's game plan. And I wonder how he feels. I don't know the game plan. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if Shane Waldron left some plays out there that he could have called for DK Metcalf. I just know the man had 4 for 35 and was targeted 6 times. And it never looked like a play was designed for him to take the top off of defense.
Here's the thing. If you were to tell the average fan, like, how many times was DK targeted in this game, you think anyone would say 6?
No, I think they say like 4.
Exactly. Some people would be like, I don't know, twice? Like, no one would think he was targeted 6 times. But, I mean, he was the second most targeted player. Tyler Lockett targeted 11 times. Like you said, a lot of those were intermediate. It just didn't feel like he was nearly as much a part of this game plan or game as he should have been, which you're paying the guy how much? 20-something million dollars a year? Like, man, it's one thing when DK is, you know, in his rookie contract still against Washington, when Russell Wilson didn't target him until the third quarter. He didn't have a reception until the fourth. And you're thinking, oh, you're misusing this great weapon. Once you've paid him and he's not being used as much, that's when you're like, oh, this is inexcusable.
Inexcusable. Give him the rock, baby. Come on.
All right. Next up. As far as what caught my eye, did you just see that? See that flash of yellow? Oh, it's another flag on the field, Bump.
You got me.
I did.
I'm looking. I'm like, where? What happened?
Another flag on the field. Seahawks were penalized 10 times. We were just saying last week, wow, did the Seahawks benefit from the Denver Broncos being penalized 12 times. And instead, in this one, it was Seattle who was being flagged a ton. 10 penalties. 6 of those penalties gifted the San Francisco 49ers a first down. The San Francisco 49ers also picked up 11 first downs via run, which means your two biggest problems in this game, missed tackles and penalties, gifted the 49ers 17 of their 25 first downs. Here's another important thing, though. How about flags last week? Seattle, much better than their counterpart in week one. Last week, the 49ers penalized 12 times.
12.
They were able to cut it down from 12 to 1. Is one team being penalized 10 times and the other one's kind of a weird discrepancy?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is a weird. Were a lot of those ticky-tacky penalties? Yeah. Yes, they were, but it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you did not play clean enough football. And importantly, here's the thing. You're going to get ticky-tacky penalties. You're going to get unfair penalties. It's just going to happen. And quite a few of those were. You've got to be a good enough team to combat when a team and the refs are against you. Now, this is a team that couldn't dig itself out of a hole. Much less dig itself out of a hole that had some additional flags.
I feel everything you just said.
Thank you.
I feel you. But let me also point out, ain't no way one team has 12 flags and the other team has 1.
I know.
And also, Brock Huber talked to Pete Carroll earlier today, and he made a great point. They are rewarding horrible throws.
Yes.
Now, I'm a receiver. I teach receivers. Look, underthrown ball, fight back to go get it. You're probably going to get a flag. It's the most ridiculous thing out there right now. DBs have one of the hardest jobs out there. Not physically, because I always leave that to the big boys in the trenches. Guys who are sacrificing their bodies on a different level. But on the outside, If you are not perfect in coverage, an underthrown ball, a receiver can just stick his hand out like he's making a play on it. A ball that he's not going to catch, and he gets a flag. Now it's up to the DBs. You have to adjust. You got to learn how they're calling the game. I'm just saying, poor Mike Jackson, poor Tariq Woolen, poor Kobe Bryant, poor Quandre. Anybody who has to guard a receiver, you got to be dang near perfect, man. It's unfair. But 12-1 stays? That's impossible.
No, it was, don't get me, it was ridiculous. Don't get me wrong. A very, very weird discrepancy. There were some really bad calls there. But that's the thing. This team has been playing so conservatively that if you get behind because another team is running all over you, or if you're penalized and you get behind, what can you do to get yourself out of it? Right now, they have yet to answer that question. That's
agree.
What I'm saying.
Agree.
All right, next up. You got one more?
I got one more, but I kind of want to save it for my four down territory.
Why
but I can pick another one, though. I can get another one.
Why don't
one.
You pick one other one, and then we'll go to four down territory a little early.
All right, let's do it. All right, another thing that caught my eye was Geno Smith and his efficiency.
Yeah.
He still completed 80% of his passes, right? Yes, it's not the 80% that you want to see, that I want to see as well.
Yeah.
Throwing the football down the field, being dynamic. We didn't see that. A lot of the offense this week was straight up front in your face. You know what you're gonna get. But Geno still, for the most part, took care of the ball. There are a couple passes. He got one interception, another one that was kind of suspect. But he completed 80%. He's doing exactly what I thought that he was going to do. All right. But now it's about the complete package, the run game, the pass games, the play actions, the defense stepping up, the big plays on special teams, not having Lockett muff a punt because somebody was pushed into him. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are some plays in this game that really put this team in a hole, and you're asking Geno to do something that he might be capable of doing, but not on a regular basis, which is throw the ball all over the yard and throw for 340 yards, three touchdowns, and win this football game. He's got a couple games in him. I believe we're going to see one or two games like that.
Sure.
But that's not the recipe to be consistent for this team, I don't think.
I would say to have a measured approach with Geno. Absolutely. I don't know many fans that entered this season looking at Geno Smith saying he's the quarterback of the future, but I do think that sometimes when a team loses, especially if they lose ugly or lose in an uncompetitive game, people immediately look at the quarterback. I don't know that the quarterback was to blame for the bulk of the offense's miscues here. This offense, well, actually, let's save some of this criticism for four down territory bump. You got some good stuff coming up here. Let's jump to it right now.
This is four down territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
All right, we're going to get to it a little bit. Fourth down. First down, though. Bump, what did the Niners show the Seahawks this weekend with Jimmy G at quarterback?
The Niners showed you how to win with a game manager. They showed you how to be dynamic and be versatile with a game manager. This man even had a rushing touchdown, Jimmy G. You know what I'm saying? You get down the goal line, boom, quarterback sneak. It was 13-21, 154. But because they are so dynamic in the run game, because all these shifts, these motions, these traps, these powers, these zones, these RPOs, these play actions, because they are so versatile, they allow Jimmy to work comfortably. I think Geno can be a Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, Jimmy wins a lot of games because he plays within himself and he understands his offense. And because this offense helps him play within himself. They're not asking him to drop back in a five-step drop and diagnose the defense. Like, nah, man, we're going to give you a bunch of window dressing before the play, and then we're going to give you two or three options to get the ball out of your hand quickly. Not too many times did Jimmy hold that football and pat the ball two or three times and look for a read. It's very quick. It looks complicated, but it's simple at the same time. The play designs are beautiful, and it helps an average or a slightly above average quarterback operate. So they showed them, and also they showed them how to be tough on defense, man. Yeah. I mean, those dudes were out there flying around, smacking you, wrapping you up, talking that talk. I mean, it was a very physical game out there. What the Niners are is what the Seahawks want to be.
That was the thing that really, really stood out to me, too. It was like, it's one thing to face a team like, Buffalo, right? Or maybe the Bucs last year would be a better example. They didn't really run the ball too much. They relied heavily on the pass. Kansas City, another one of those. And you're like, you know what? People went in their own ways. Kyle Shanahan's running a balanced offense.
Yep.
They like to run the ball. They run the ball creatively. They got a great defense that can stop the pass. I mean, that's who Pete Carroll wants to be. And it was so weird to see this kind of version of what you could be on the other side. And then who you are now still has a ways to go.
One more thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the good thing about this also is that
we got extra time in this one.
The 49ers put that on film. And I coach high school football, right? I'm not in college or the NFL, but I watch college film and NFL film all the time. The good coaches, when you see something that works for another team, I'm taking that. I don't know how many times I've watched film and I've hit up my coaches. We're stealing that from them. Like, that is a well-designed play. I get what they're trying to accomplish there. We have the players to do that. Let's go ahead and get that. The Niners have George Kittle and Dwelly over there. George Kittle, one of the best tight ends in the league. We don't have a George Kittle, but we got a Noah Fant, we got a Kobe Parkinson, and we have a Will Disley. We have enough tight ends to execute some of the things that they are doing. I'm hoping Shane is doing what the league does, copycat league, steal some of that. Do some of that.
You know, you mentioned stealing some of it. Bump, it's funny you say that because Curtis and I have, we have another camp.
We do.
It's,
yeah.
It's the Curtis and Stacy do film study better than Bump Camp LLC.
Grind and tape.
And one of our number one rules is to steal from other people. So yeah, that's kind of what we encourage. We do stealing from other teams, and then we do something not a lot of people are brave enough to do.
What's that?
Which is sending people with video cameras to other teams' practices.
Really only Bill Belichick is
he gets
he's
it.
He's the only guy who's ever done that.
He understands the sacrifices
and like,
you have to make.
Like we said, if you got to steal, we're stealing from Bill Belichick.
Exactly. Well, we realize that what you do is instead of waiting for them to put it on tape, you steal it beforehand.
Exactly.
And then
so that's why you haven't gotten your All-22 film yet.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Is that you haven't stolen it from anybody.
But I just think you could learn a lot from us in that case.
Sign me up.
Yeah, thank you.
Our motto is always be grinding.
Yes.
Always be stealing.
Tape.
And always be stealing.
That's exactly what it is. Second down. What stats are the most concerning in the loss to the Niners on Sunday?
Two stats. One, time of possession. Hawks have the ball 21 minutes, and Niners have the ball 38 minutes. That means they are just controlling the game. They control the pace. They're setting the tone. Second one, number of plays ran by the offense. 2 weeks in a row, they gone under 50. Week one, they ran 49 plays. Ooh. Week two, they ran 47 plays.
I hate this stat. I hate it.
So not only are you not possessing the ball, Niners are running that, or for 2 weeks in a row, the other team has pretty much ran that. You're not getting your plays off. He talked about that third down stat earlier in the show. It's all connected. It's all connected. You need to be around 60 plays on offense to really be moving. You need to be around 50% conversions on third downs. And we just haven't seen that the first 2 weeks. Now, we've seen moments where things look good. They put some plays together. But that needs to happen throughout the game. If you look at the drive chart for the 49ers, man, they come out, boom, 11 plays, 7 plays, 8 plays, 9 plays, 13 plays, right? You look at the Hawks, we're not getting that. 6 plays, 5 plays, 3 plays, 6 plays. It's all connected. If you want to win the ball game, you must possess a football, be good on third downs. We have struggled in that department so far.
Well, and it's like how many series or drives might the average team have in a game? 9?
12.
10,
12? 12. 12
so if you think about having 40-something plays, if you go 3 and out on between 10 and 12 drives, right? Like you're starting to look at a team that's just not staying on the field for like 5 or more plays.
Yeah.
6 or more plays. 7 or more plays. Like you're getting a little too low.
Yeah, Niners.
That's a low number. I know you hear like 47 and it's like, whatever. I mean, in week one, you got the job done. That's not, you are not on the field nearly as much
it's
as
not
you
ideal.
Should be.
Niners had 10 drives that last game. 1, 2.
Just
Hawks had 9. So, yeah, this is what it is.
All right, third down. Who was a positive in a losing effort this weekend?
I've already mentioned him. Al Woods was a positive.
Yes.
Love what he did. The big man had 3 tackles for loss. The pass defender was doing his thing, but also Tyler Lockett. Now, I've kind of complained about, Tyler Lockett's getting all the intermediate routes, as he should. Like, good for him, 9 for 107. That's going to open up everything else. So those two guys did their thing on offense. What we need to see more is the run game. Got to get Rashad Penny, Ken Walker. But we also know that when you're down 20-0 at the half, you're going to have to open some things up. But I'm happy for Tyler Lockett. He wanted to return punts. That's the reason why he's back there. His muff punt wasn't his fault. His teammate got pushed into him. That's a heads-up play by the 49ers gunner over there because that's the rule. You can push players into the returner, cause havoc. That's exactly what he did. Heads-up play by them. But Tyler Lockett, man, he's trying to lead out there. Last week we saw him giving out tips to the defense, calling out signals from Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that was really cool to see.
So Tyler Lockett, Al Woods, big ups to y'all, man. Let's have another good week.
Fourth down. What do you think? think needs to happen offensively for the Seahawks to put points on the board? They have not scored in six consecutive quarters.
Six quarters they have not scored. And what I saw this week was a upfront, straight-at-you offense, meaning we're going to get in a two-by-two set. Nothing is happening. We're just getting in two-by-two set, two receivers to the right, two receivers to the left. We're going to run. What I saw that first week, I saw shifts. I saw motions. I saw RPOs. We saw the tight ends get involved. We saw screens to the receiver. We saw a screen to the tight end. We saw a screen to the running back. We saw play action.
You get a screen.
Everybody gets a screen. It felt like the creativity wasn't where it was that very first week. Now, maybe that's the OC looking at this and saying, okay, they're going to prepare for that. Let's switch it up. But in my opinion, I'm like, okay, prepare for it. I'm going to show it to you. Then I'm going to have something off of that. I just didn't see that. The most creativity we saw was the flea flicker play to DK and the three running back situation, which I like the three running back situation. Let's just run that rock. You know what I'm saying? So I want this offense to get back to all the movement that we saw in week one. That gives Geno the best opportunity to be successful because, one, it declares what the defense is doing with shift in motion. You're able to kind of diagnose what coverage they're in. It forces them to communicate, and it gives your offense alignment angles. That's what the 49ers do a great job of doing, man. They will move that tight end to the right side so he has a better angle on the mic or the wheel. I mean, they will move Juszczyk outside to see if they're a man, bring him back. So now Jimmy knows what he's looking at. We just didn't see that. And I don't know why we didn't see that. There's a rhyme and a reason. Those guys watch all the film and do all the research.
Sure.
But that's what I saw. That's what I think will help this offense get going. We saw that in the first half of the Denver Broncos game. And then the second half, it kind of went away. You know, I don't know why. And then we heard Pete Carroll talking about we have to allow Geno to push the ball down the field. So I think Pete Carroll sees it and he wants to see it. And it's going to be on film. Let's see how they respond.
Do you ever think, I'm not saying this is happening with Waldron. Pete Carroll talked about, hey, one of the problems in this could be that we were overthinking on both sides of the ball. Do you think that's something that happens with offensive and defensive coordinators, especially young offensive and defensive coordinators?
All the time, man. Sometimes you have to line up in your stuff and say, yeah, you know what play is coming out, beat it. You still got to beat it. You know, we still have an offensive line, a couple running backs and receivers. You got your guys, too. I could tell you, I mean, the most gratifying moment in the world is when you line up and they know what you're going to run and you still whoop their you know what. And I think the Hawks can do that. Show them what you put on film and then grow off of it.
All right, coming up in the timeline, Broncos fans, show us the definition of irony. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey. We're reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. As a reminder for you guys, before we get started here, we are in a short show. We have a final segment coming up at 11:45. It's What I Need to Know, and then we are taking you straight into the Mariners pregame show. That is ahead of a 1:07 p.m. first pitch against the Angels on the road. So I need your questions for What I Need to Know. Get those sent in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. Any question you have, send it in right now. Let's get to the timeline, though, Bump, and we'll start with this one. I know you're going to sound off. UW is somehow ranked below Michigan State in the coaches' poll. I'm not going to complain about it, but I'll accept it. While Wazoo is the first Power 5 team to be 3-0 with a true road win over a ranked team and remain unranked. The floor is yours.
What else do we have to do? 3-0, we go to Madison, number 19 team. Oh, they're too big. They're too strong. They're going to run you guys over. Nah, that D-line did their thing. Cam Ward might have thrown a couple picks, but he also threw a touchdown to Nikhil Watson, who transferred from Wisconsin to Wazoo for a reason. So he can go back to the house and do what he does. Now, I understand and I get UW being ranked. Good for you guys. Clap it up. I was rooting for you guys. But the disrespect has to stop. It has to stop. What else do we need to do? We're 3-0. So now, next week, when we go and do our thing against Oregon, what are you going to say? All right, say we don't win against Oregon. Say it's a tight game, all right? Oregon gets all the benefit of the doubt. Yes, they lost to Georgia. They beat Eastern, and then they beat BYU. All right, you get smacked by Georgia. Smacked. But you're still ranked. All right, Oregon, I get it. You beat Eastern. All right, I get it. You handle your business. All right, I get it. All we do is win right now. All right, all we've done is win, and we are now ranked. Give us number 25. Stop hating on the Cougs, all right? Now, it's a week-by-week type of deal. I get it. This is football, all right? Next week, you might feel differently about us. But right now, what's today's day, Stace? on the 19th of September, all right, we should have been ranked. Our defense is flying around. Cam Ward looks good. We have a run game, which is something we haven't had in a very long time. I'm just saying, man, stop the hate. All right, and all you dogs out there who are going to, oh, blah, blah, I've shown y'all enough love for a couple weeks now, all right? So y'all need to support me on this. You know and I know that these Cougs need to be ranked. Stop hating on the little school from Pullman.
No, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I absolutely think Wazoo should be ranked. I'm trying to put myself into the mindset of the coaches poll, of the AP Top 25, figuring out what goes into excluding Wazoo and not voting for Wazoo. And the only thing I can think of is not a belief that any of their wins are because they're a good program and instead are based on the luck of a mediocre program upsetting. I am not saying that's what it is. I am saying the mindset.
I feel like you're kind of saying
No.
There are, Stacey's not going to say
No.
I'm going to say something because this reeks of classic East Coast bias. In fact, if there was a coastal kind of bias about this situation, it would be the Eastern kind, all right? That's what this reeks of.
Thank you.
Because the NCAA and their SEC agenda is on full display. Not 1 week in a row, but 2 weeks in a row, a Pac-12 team has beaten a Big Ten school, a ranked Big Ten school, and you're telling me only one of them can be ranked?
Only
right,
one.
Right. I'm not disagreeing. I agree with both of you. I was trying to think of the argument they're making, and it's not a good one, basically, is what I'm saying. It's, yeah. I can't top these rants. Like, I can't. I have to move to the next story.
Oh,
Broncos
man.
Fans
were,
yeah, that was wonderful. I always love
it. Look, I may rag on the Huskies from time to time,
but
at the end of the day,
yeah,
we're all fighting the same fight
exactly.
here in the Pac-12.
Exactly. And I'm always down for an East Coast. The minute I hear, you guys remember the pearl clutching from Broncos fans and the rest of the national NFL media when Seahawks fans decided to boo their former longtime veteran quarterback Russell Wilson upon his return to Lumen Field. People were disgusted that fans could possibly boo him. Well, looks like the tables have been turned here because Broncos fans were booing their quarterback and their team in a tough game against Houston over the weekend. Here is Broncos fans at one point counting down the play clock because the team was having issues getting snap off.
With the fans counting down the play clock, Wilson stumbles, goes down, gets back up, and now he's taken down.
And you know, we had to include it here. Broncos fans booing their own team's offense.
Kirksey and King combine on the tackle. And out comes the punter, Waitman, and some boos for this Denver offense.
I mean, look.
In the great words of Michael Scott, oh, have the turns have tabled.
Oh, have the turns tabled. How the turns tabled.
Now they know it's only you are allowed to boo. No
right.
one else is allowed
right.
to boo.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, but, you know, Russell, he struggled, man. And get used to the play clock countdown. That's just what Russell and his offense does. I don't know how many times we're out of a timeout and you know the play and you get to the line of scrimmage and it's 5-4. We're like, Russ,
yep.
snap the ball.
Yep.
We know what's going
yep.
on. So, yeah, I mean, he's yours now. Do your thing.
All right. Curtis, this one's also for you. Shout out to Arizona here. Bear down. Arizona State fired Herm Edwards following the Sun Devils' home loss to Eastern Michigan. This, of course, is in light not only of Herm Edwards and his program not doing well on the field, but potentially some upcoming sanctions and most certainly an investigation off the field for a number of recruiting violations. My favorite part, Herm Edwards in press conferences has not called it an investigation, but instead, quote, a review.
Just a review.
Just a review.
Just a classic review.
It's just a classic kind of quarterly review is what it is.
Herm. I will miss him on the sidelines. I will miss what the Sun Devils could have become under him, but it just never felt like this was ever going to end successfully.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the most wins they had in a season with him at the helm was 8. Like, just classic ASU, just a mid-level Pac-12 school on the field. Number one in innovation, consistently number 10 in, like, the Pac-12. Like, they're just mediocre at best. I hope Paul Moyer's listening.
Moyer,
he
probably is,
all
honestly.
You can strive to be if you're an ASU grad is mediocre.
I'm counting – within the minute you're getting a text is going to be probably my prediction here. All right, two things.
Can I say one thing about that?
Yes, absolutely.
At least we get Herm back on TV. He's fun on TV.
Yeah, yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Two things very quickly here. Number one, send in your text for What I Need to Know, 866-979-3776. Any question you have, it could be about the Seahawks, Mariners, literally anything, send it in now. We're going to wrap it up with your questions and our answers at What I Need to Know today for a short show. Number two, I've made this part of the timeline, but given that we have a short show, we don't have NFL headlines today. So I got two very quick NFL stories I want to be able to get to. So here we go. Also in the timeline, the Titans are elevating Josh Gordon to the active roster for tonight's game against the Bills. Will we actually see him have a catch?
Yes.
Have two catches.
And it's going to be a 40-yard catch at least. That's what he does.
It's going to be the one. It's going to be converting third down with a 29-yard reception, and then that's the only time we'll see him.
Man, he's one of the most unfortunate stories in the league. He legit had the talent to be one of the best receivers to ever play this game.
Yes.
If he played in today's game, was a rookie, he'd be good to go. But I'm rooting for him, man. I hope he has a catch.
Josh Gordon, I'm pulling up his, I should know this number off the top of my head. I've written it down a million times. 2013. He missed two games and still had 1,646 receiving yards.
Come on.
He had another 88 rushing yards, which is like whatever, but still 1,734 total yards from scrimmage.
And his quarterbacks that year were Jason Campbell.
Nice.
Brandon Weeden.
But of course.
And Brian Hoyer.
Whew.
Hoya.
And he got 1,600 receiving yards. 1,600.
Dude's incredible, man. Incredible.
And the thing is, when you watch him play, obviously he never surpassed 1,000 yards for the rest of his career, never even surpassed 800 yards for the rest of his career. But it wasn't this one-off kind of like, oh, you saw him, and he has this one great year, and then he's actually horrible.
Mm-hmm.
He was great.
Yep.
Like, he was genuinely really talented. And just couldn't.
Got caught up with the rules, man. Yeah. NFL rules.
Bummer. All right, second here. Mike Evans has been suspended for one game for unnecessary roughness. That's what we're calling it. With Saints cornerback Marshawn Lattimore, the two got into a fight Sunday during the game.
Did you see what he told the refs?
No, I did not.
He said, it's Tom Brady. What do you expect me to do?
Well,
you sticking up for your quarterback.
Yeah.
But Tom Brady, he starts all this. You know what he does? The old Tariq Woolen backpedal, baby. He backs up out of that thing. I'm like, man, that's such a GOAT move, though. Like, hey, I'm not a goon, but I got goons.
That's the Mike Trout situation between the Mariners and Angels when they had their fight, their scrum. It was this idea of starting it, and then it's like, where is Mike Trout? Has anyone seen him? All right, it's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. We are wrapping things up with What I Need to Know, so get your questions in right now. Right now, 866-979-3776. Any question you have on your mind, send it in. Your questions, our answers are next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, get your questions in for What I Need to Know, brought to you by Allred Heating, Cooling, Electric. The Mac and Jex text line is 866-979-3776. Again, 866-979-3776. Send your questions now very quickly. We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners close out their series against the Angels today. First pitch at 1:07 p.m. Pregame show starts next right here on Seattle Sports Station. No Julio in the lineup. Logan Gilbert on the mound. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company. Question number one. Bump, I'm going to throw to you for this. What I Need to Know. An honest assessment of this O-line's performance so far. Run game, pass game, but also considering two starting rookies.
I think they've been all right, man. Run game hasn't been the greatest, right? And half of that was because of the circumstances they've been in with the 49ers, with the Broncos. It was also because of circumstances, because Geno was just hot. He starts off 13 of 13, 17 of 18, 23 of 25. You ride that hot hand. But yes, you do need to get the run game going. As far as pass pro, I think they've been solid as well. Have only given up 4 sacks so far. And the tackles have been okay. Abe Lucas had kind of a rough game last game, right? Had a illegal man down the field, which brought back a big play, and I think he also had one more penalty. But considering all those things, I think they are okay, and I think they are going to be okay.
Speaking of the offense, here's another question. This one from the 253, What I Need to Know. When is it time to switch up the quarterbacks and see if Drew Lock can give them a spark on offense?
It ain't time yet, I'll tell you that. Yeah. When Geno's completing 80% of his passes right now. He's 47-58, 81%, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. That's what you should expect from Geno. He's doing exactly what...
I don't think Geno's the problem.
Geno's not the problem.
Because of the expectations for Geno. The expectation isn't that Geno save your team the way a franchise quarterback can save a struggling team. The expectation is that the foundation around Geno improves this year.
Yep, exactly. So if the pieces around him help out even more, they adjust the play calling a little bit, do the things that we saw in the first half against the Broncos, and Geno continue to do what he does, he'll be all right.
Yeah. From the 509, what I need to know, what's the worst way you've ever quit a job?
The worst way I ever quit a job is stop showing up.
Really?
Didn't say nothing.
No.
Stop showing up.
What,
I was young.
What job was this?
It was, I think it was like Parks and Recs.
Wow.
I just stopped showing up. I was mad at my supervisor. Kids do not handle business this way. I was mad at my supervisor. I just stopped showing up. I'm like, I'm gone.
Curtis, have you ever done something like that? I've never. I'm too much of a goody two-shoes. I was always like, hi, I'd like to give my 2 weeks. They're like, you are 16 and you're a waitress. We're fine. You can go home.
You can go. No, I mean, one time I had a vacation planned out like months in advance, and it fell during my 2 weeks vacation or 2 weeks notice. So having off days in my 2 weeks notice was, I mean, maybe not the greatest thing, but
yeah.
I have been very heads up about whenever I've left a job. Matt Nelson's in my ear telling me I should have just said, right now, and then just laugh.
I don't like that one. The 208 says, this isn't a question. Are you kidding me? Geno Smith is check down Charlie. He's completing a high percentage of passes because he doesn't throw the ball down the field. It's ridiculous.
But and I say to that person, Geno's not calling the plays. Like, people put so much on Geno Smith. I think he's taking exactly what the defense is giving him. And they're giving him the check downs. I'm looking at DK and his route running. There's not too many things downfield. No, we saw intermediate passing. If he was check down Charlie, Lockett wouldn't have gone for over 100 yards this past game. Like, he's taking the check downs because stuff is covered up.
That pass to DK was 49 yards.
Yeah. And he also had 1-2 Lockett for 27 yards along. So, I mean, watch a little film and then holler at me when you do.
Ooh. What I need to know. First off, really appreciate you guys. All love from Hawaii. Go Seahawks, go Mariners. When is Julio coming back? Also, how do you feel about JP batting first again? Is he going to get on base? I think so, but want to hear y'all's take.
Curtis?
Based off of like Julio's recovery, I would guess the Oakland series is when we're going to see him. Maybe even tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But not today, obviously. He is available, I think, off the bench. JP batting leadoff. I mean, who else are you going to put at leadoff right now? There really isn't anybody that kind of fits that mold. And JP did well out of the leadoff spot a year ago. Obviously, his bat is not really heating up at all. But look, just get through it until Julio comes back, until Suarez comes back. Because, boy, this lineup right now, not really putting the fear of God into anybody.
Do you want to call him getting on base or not first at bat?
JP getting on base.
Yeah.
He's going to be up against a lefty in Suarez today.
Lefty on lefty.
I'm not hopeful that he'll get on base to lead off. I'm going to say no, he does not.
All right. What I need to...
Stacey was thinking about it.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Do I make a donut bet on the first at bat of the game?
I'm not making a donut bet, but I'm going to say he gets on base.
All right.
What I need to know, Russell Wilson rushed once for 2 yards against Seattle and twice for 3 against Houston. What do you predict his total rushing yards will be this season? You can do an over-under if you want.
No, I'll give you the exact number.
Yeah, please do.
275.
He's going to have to pick up the pace.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He'll be good for a couple big scrambles for 2025, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not seeing the rust we used to see.
Yeah,
naturally, he's getting older.
I don't know that I buy into the theory that, he's protecting his body as he got older, and I do think that he thought this would be his last year here, but I don't buy into the theory that he could still really run it and just wasn't doing it here. Like, I think he's just older.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me tell you what, 30 hits you hard, man. 30 hits you hard. What I need to know, I'm going to piggyback off last week's Scott Service beer choice. Scott Service on with the Scott Service show with us said his favorite beer was, I don't remember.
It's a Leinenkugel's Summer Shandy.
What is your go-to drink at T-Mobile Park?
At T-Mobile, I would say I usually get just an IPA of some sort and then a tall boy, of course. Like, you know, you go heavy, then you go light, and
nice
call
little
it good.
Chaser.
Yeah, yeah.
Curtis, what do you get?
They used to have those, like, $5 cans. I don't know if they still do or not.
There was that secret place right behind the center field bleachers, kind of.
I used to hit up there, get some $5 Rainiers. They also, I mean, call me basic, but I like myself some Manny's, myself some Mac and Jacks. I'm not getting too crazy with it. Also, most times when I'm at the ballpark, I'm working, so I can't really, you know,
I can't enjoy it. Now, I don't mean to play into the stereotype I know both of you have of me, but I go
rosé.
I go rosé, or I go hard seltzer. It's one of those two things.
Hey, she walks out stumbling.
It is.
Rosé and seltzer.
All right, you guys. The Mariners pregame show is coming your way next. No Julio in the lineup. Logan Gilbert on the mound, and let's see if they can try to save this series here. It's coming up next. Don't go anywhere.